T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, back to the Gary Parish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN with Jeff Calkins on today's show, presented by the Blue Monkey.
Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner is not your traditional mattress and furniture store. Their prices are always 50% to 80% off retail stores, so they don't have to have sales. Already killing the competition 52 weeks a year. Got an A-plus rating, Better Business Bureau. And when readers of the Commercial Appeal were asked to vote for the best mattress store in the area, the winner 4 straight years, Sleepy Z's. But they don't just sell mattresses, also furniture. It's in the name. Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture, living room sets, dining room sets, rugs, anything you need to furnish your home. You can probably find it at Sleepy Z's. And if it's not on the floor, understand there's a 42-inch kiosk filled with furniture. You can browse through that, find what you want. They'll get it for you. They're located at 2790 Kirby Whitten and Bartlett at the corner of Summer Avenue next door to Hollywood Feed. If you want to call them, 901-692-6200, 692-6200. Remember to mention you heard about them on the Gary Parish Show. You're going to save an additional 10% on your purchase. That's at Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner. They're on the web. SleepyZZZS.com, SleepyZZZS.com. Jeff Calkins, award-winning commentary, Memphian, host of the Jeff Calkins Show. He joins me now. Jeff Calkins, how are you today?
I'm good, Gary. And you?
I'm sleepy. I'm ready to go to sleep. Like, if you told me I could not do the next hour of the show and just lay down, I would lay down. Maybe not on this floor here, but somewhere, certainly. Maybe in my car again for the second straight day.
Well, maybe you'll have that opportunity shortly. We're winding down.
Yep.
The show is winding down.
Yeah. I wonder if I can talk my entire family into going to bed by 7:30. Probably everybody except I think Oliver would be the one that he'd be the holdout. He'd be the one that wouldn't be down for that. But we'll see. I'll get through it. My problems are small problems, and really they're not even problems at all. So, hey, woke up today. Memphis had a quadra one win. That's something. They got one without even playing.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was good. Yep.
Now, I don't know if it's going to remain a quadra one win, because to do so, it would need Central Florida to stay in the top 30 of the net. But right now, we can say Memphis is 1-7 against quadra one opportunities. That's better than the 0-8 that they were yesterday. In all seriousness, earlier today, and I can't remember if I told you this earlier when you were here in studio or not, but my answer has consistently been, even if Memphis wins at Cincinnati and then beats Tulsa, and then depending on their seed, either plays 3 games or 2 games and wins all of them to get to the championship game of the AAC tournament, and then loses a competitive game to, I don't know, maybe Cincinnati, I still don't think that's going to be enough. And I still believe that today, but I decided, like, maybe I should just email my friend and colleague Jerry Palm, who literally does this for a living, and ask him, like, okay, total hypothetical, probably not going to happen, but what if they beat Cincinnati, then they beat Tulsa, then they're the 5th seed in the AAC tournament, they beat Tulane, then they beat Temple, and then they beat Houston, and then they lose to Cincinnati in the title game. Would that get them in the conversation for an at-large bid? He said, absolutely, they'd be in the conversation for an at-large bid then. He said the reason he doesn't have them on his bubble watch thing at CBSSports.com is because what I just described, and this is a fair point, isn't a likely scenario. It doesn't really mesh with anything else that they've done this entire season. But if it were to go down that way, then even Jerry Palm says, yes, there is, it's possible that they could get an at-large bid with that kind of resume, because that kind of performance into the AAC title game would have them on Selection Sunday at either 22-12 or 23-12, based on how many games they had to play in the AAC tournament. And they would probably at that point, if the Central Florida one was still a quadrant one win, well, then they'd have to get tomorrow's against Cincinnati and then another one against Houston. They could have 3 Q1 wins on Selection Sunday and at least a chance. And so that's encouraging to hear it from an actual bracketologist, I guess.
Yeah. It still sounds like conversation, though. He didn't say, "Oh yeah, they'd be in." He
right.
said they'd be then, and the other problem, of course, is that scenario involves A, beating Cincinnati on the road. Well, they got a chance to do that tomorrow. I'll be there, and then. Because they'll in the scenario that we're looking at, they're either a 4 or 5, so therefore you're getting Houston in the semifinal, a really good Houston team. Yes, at home, but it's a really good Houston team. So you would have to get 2 wins. First of all, we're saying probably still won't get you in. We'll get you in the conversation, and it would be 2 wins better than any win you have this year in the next week, basically. That's possible, but it as Jerry Palm said, seems unlikely.
Well, it is unlikely. I mean, odds are, and I talked about this earlier, by Monday we'll be done with this, right? I mean, odds are, by Monday we will not be able to talk about at-large possibilities anymore. We'll start talking about seeding and, you know, what it would take to win the auto bid. But if they do not win tomorrow night, there is no point to any other at-large conversation. If you hear somebody having one, tell them to shut up because it's over with if they don't win tomorrow night. But today's March 1st, and when's the last time on March 1st we could actually have a conversation about Memphis maybe getting an at-large bid to the tournament? I think
it's funny. Yeah, we were discussing today on my show, this is the biggest, if you're answering the question, this is the biggest Memphis basketball game since blank, what is the answer to that? And now you could say, well, they were in the semifinals of the tournament last year against Cincinnati. Yeah, the truth of the matter is they were in the semifinals of the tournament against Cincinnati, and that feels in some ways like bigger than a regular game against Cincinnati, except for it was so awkward because at that point we knew Tubby was going to get fired. And so, honestly, the winning, if had they won, it was just making things more awkward. And so I don't really think that was bigger in terms of the stakes. The stakes were already settled. Tubby was going to get fired. Penny was going to get the job. So I think this is bigger than that game. So then you could say, all right, well, what's the biggest game since when then? And then you can go back to winning. Oh, the year that they made the championship game when Pastner got fired, also in Orlando. They made the Pastner championship game against UConn. And same thing, though. Like, we didn't know at that point that Pastner was going to be bought out that year. We didn't know Georgia Tech was going to step up. But by then, like, everyone wasn't all in on Memphis. Yeah, they would have liked Memphis winning because it's more fun to win. But it was, again, it was this strange circumstance where a lot of people were kind of hoping that he'd lose so he'd get fired, right? So I think if you're really talking about this is the biggest Memphis game since when, it takes you back to the year 13-14.
Yeah.
And that's the year. And you can either there say, it's the year that it's the game against Virginia, or the game against GW and the tournament. Although Jason makes the point that even by then, people had already given up on sort of the program, and because by then they got blown out by UConn at home in the conference tournament. So he thinks it's the biggest game since earlier in that year. They'd beaten. Maybe a game against Cincinnati. They had already beaten Louisville twice. But basically, I think it's the biggest Memphis basketball game since 13-14.
I think that's right. And I also think this is the first March 1st that you can actually have a conversation, a real one, about Memphis maybe getting an at-large bid. It's the first March 1st since March 1st, 2014.
13-14.
Yeah. It's 5 years ago. I mean, we haven't been able to have this conversation in 5 years. That's crazy.
Right. At Memphis basketball, that's crazy.
Right. But here we, and so to me, and we've talked about this in different ways for a while now, it's among the reasons, and like on a long list of reasons, that year one under Penny is nothing other than a success, no matter what happens tomorrow night or going forward on the basketball court, because we got to March 1st. We can still have real conversations about at-large chances. And we're in this position, given that he took over a program that finished 161st at KenPom last season. Even though I know Penny said he expected to make the NCAA tournament in year one, Nobody else expected them to make the NCAA tournament in year one. I just honestly said in the preseason, can you still be in the conversation on March 1st? And it finally is March 1st, and they're still in the conversation. That's all good stuff.
Well, and not only that, last night James Wiseman went 27, 20, and 10. It is interesting. Had James Wiseman picked Kentucky, we'd still be encouraged by this year. Like, it still would have been fun to be Wichita State. Still would have been fun to watch Jeremiah doing what he's doing. But the fact that Jeremiah last night was out, as was Alo, and watching James Wiseman score 27, pull down 20 rebounds, and get 10 blocks. Like, it just is, it's the whole thing's just fantastic. And gosh, he looks unbelievable. He looks unbelievable. So that's the backdrop to all this, too. You have the great fun of what is to come.
And talking to Jeff Calkins here on 92.9 FM ESPN. When's the last time you were at Cincinnati for a basketball game? Has it been a while?
Yeah, I went there. It's a game that I do occasionally. They always feels like they get blown out. The last time I went there, they got destroyed. It was a pastor year. It may have been that year. It may have been 13-14, honestly. They get blown out there a lot. Like, that's a tough one. Were you there the year that was it you there the year that what's his name the cigarette the gang member who tried to burn his girlfriend with a cigarette? What the hell's that?
Sean Banks.
Were you there the year that Sean Banks? I think he beat Cincinnati. I was there for that win. Were you there for that one game?
Dude, not only was I there, I was flying with the team. I was flying with the Tigers. And if you remember the way that went down, so Memphis beats, I can't remember who won the game, but Sean Banks was awesome.
Sean Banks had a big game, and Bob Huggins tried to talk him to go on pro on the spot, basically.
So Huggs comes in the media room, and right. And like, keep in mind, Sean Banks is a freshman, all right? He has three more years of eligibility if he wants
it. He had like 27 points or something like that. He had a huge game. He was tremendous.
So, let me actually try to find out what year that was. Oh, I don't know. It doesn't matter. But so Sean Banks is incredible against Cincinnati. And Huggs comes into the media room afterwards and unprompted, best I can remember, starts in on, but the good news is, thank God we don't ever have to deal with that kid again. Because, like, he's going to enter the NBA draft, and then we'll be done with that, because I can't imagine having to coach against him next season, because he's just a nightmare, and thank God he'll be a millionaire this time next year. And so we get to – somehow John hears about that. And this was, like, pre-Twitter, so I don't know how you go about hearing about that, but somehow John heard about it, John Calipari. And I just remember being back at the airport getting ready to get on the plane, and Cal's like, why is he trying to talk about my player like that? Why is he trying to? He's trying to get my guys to enter the NBA draft. And like, Huggs is the type who will then call him and laugh like, ha, 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 John, did you hear what I said about Sean Banks entering the NBA draft? Like, Huggs is just up there having fun. But I remember John being furious because he thought an opposing coach, a rival coach, was trying to get his best player to enter the NBA draft. I mean, I just remember like John Calipari being as mad as he could get about it. I'm looking here. Okay, so if this
was it 2003 maybe? I think I was looking at, I think it may have been 2003.
Okay, it looks like Sean Banks' freshman year was the 2003-2000. It was, because the Darius Washington missed free throws year was 2005, and that was Sean's sophomore year, but he, flunked out of school in the middle of the season. So this would have been 2004, and Memphis was at Cincinnati. Last game of the regular season, they lost 83-79. So it was a close game. Cincinnati wins it, but Sean Banks was awesome. And then Huggs did what he did there. And then Memphis goes to the NCAA tournament, got absolutely destroyed by the Tony Allen Oklahoma State team. Then they enrolled Darius Washington, and I could do a whole book on that 2004-2005 team when Sean Banks comes back. Remember, that's the year Sean Banks skipped the Team USA stuff. Even though it was at the Nets practice facility like 2 miles from his house. He skipped it. And the reason he skipped it is because he was scared he was going to have to take a drug test and he'd fail it. Like, that's why he skipped it. It was a story. Like, he didn't show up. And nobody knew why. It wasn't like Sean Banks withdrew. It was like Sean Banks is missing They went to his house to try to find him. And what he was told was, if you go there, you know they're going to drug test you. And he was like, I can't pass a drug test. So he just decided not to go. And then he doesn't show up back on the Memphis campus until the night before the fall classes start, which is not normal. Basketball players are basically here all summer. He didn't show up until the night before classes started. And keep in mind, this is when I was the beat writer. I was at all of those practices, and he was a nightmare. I mean, just a total POS every day. And that team had issues every day because it was basically Sean and the other gang members all on one side, and Darius and, you know, Rodney Carney and all of the decent guys, like, on the other side. The team was split, like, right down the middle. Like, the bad guys and the good guys. And Sean was one of the bad guys. And I'll never forget, there was a moment in practice one time where it was clearly just, you know, the team was split down the middle. And Darius wasn't the most popular guy on that roster. And John blows the whistle, and, like, everybody stops, and John screams, I want everybody in this building to understand. I know everybody's picked sides. I know that this is split, and I know everybody's got their sides. But I want you to know, I'm with the kid, pointing at Darius. That's whose side I'm on. And so if you're not on his side, you're on the wrong side. And it obviously didn't fix anything because it leads to Arthur Barclay punching Sean Banks after the Texas game. I mean, the whole season was insane. Dude, I'm supposed to ride back to the airport from the hotel the morning after the Texas game with Lamar Chance, who worked who was SID at the time. And I get a phone call very early. Like, hey, can you ride some other way? Like, I needed to find another ride to the airport for some reason. I was like, sure, whatever. I get to the airport, and I've told this story before. Sean Banks is sitting, and they were flying commercial at the time. I get to the airport in Austin. Sean Banks, with a big black eye, is sitting in front of the airport by himself. And what he's told the Memphis staff is that he's not flying back with the team. He's trying to book a flight home on his own to New Jersey. He was like, just going to quit the team and fly back to New Jersey. And I forget exactly what they had to do, but I think they had to put Sean on like a separate flight from the team to get him back here. And then like everybody saw the black eye, and I reported from sources that it was because Arthur Barclay punched him. But the whole thing was a circus. I mean,
I'm reading right now from his Wikipedia entry.
Right.
I don't know where he is right now.
He might be in jail. He was in jail.
Well, listen, here you go. This is the last two paragraphs of his Wikipedia entry. Banks was charged with an August 2011 incident in which it was alleged that he had been part of a group of four men who had robbed homes in Jefferson Township in Sparta, New Jersey, before leading police on a high-speed chase that resulted in the crash of the stolen vehicle that the group had been driving. Banks was said to be involved with an offshoot at what had been called the James Bond Gang, which had used high-end sports cars to outrun police. On March 2014, now this one isn't good, but none of them are good, Banks was issued a warrant for his arrest after failing to appear at a sentencing, which he agreed to probation, avoiding jail time for assaulting his girlfriend in 2013. Banks now faces years in prison for each of his crimes, stemming from a 2013 incident in which police said Banks assaulted his girlfriend with a broomstick and belt and then restrained her from leaving before fleeing police on foot. Banks was arrested more than four times in 2013, including an incident in which he burglarized a woman's home in Englewood and then slashed her tires, as well as failing to appear in court numerous times. That was a quality young man they recruited. He just needed a second chance.
Dude, that can you imagine a high-profile coach trying to enroll Sean Banks today? Like, you couldn't even enroll him. He was, like, it's not even, like, given the nature of the sport, I'm sure there are players at lots of universities who are gang affiliated, right? Have gang ties.
Right.
I'm sure that's not a unique thing. Like, I mean, Cardi B's gang affiliated, for crying out loud, and she just won a Grammy, all right? But Sean Banks was identified and labeled by New Jersey police as a gang member and was arrested in high school because he was burning a gang sign into like a 15-year-old girl's body. And like that wasn't like hearsay. It was all in the newspapers.
Wasn't even controversial, as I recall.
And they enrolled him like no problem. There's two things,
He's a talented player.
He was awesome for a year, and then he was a disaster. He came back skinnier. Yeah. Like, he came back like a guy who had a drug problem. I mean, he came back like a guy who had a drug problem. But there's two things from the John Calipari era at Memphis that happened that if they happened today and he handled them the way he handled them then, it would maybe cost him his job. One is enrolling Sean Banks. Like, you just could not do that. And the other one is how he handled the Jeremy Hunt thing.
Right.
If he tried to handle the Jeremy Hunt situation today, I mean, he wouldn't because he's not dumb. But that soundbite that still exists somewhere of you and others asking him questions the day after the Jeremy Hunt incident about, because he would not say that Jeremy Hunt's not going to play in the game, and they were getting ready to play Marquette, and like he just wouldn't say he was being stubborn about it, and he finally, when somebody asked a third question or whatever it was about domestic violence, he says, "Does anybody have a question about Travis Diener?"
Right.
If you did that today after one of your players beat up a woman, you would be fired. I like almost regardless of who you are. If you talked about domestic violence in the way today, in the way that he talked about domestic violence then, you'd probably lose your job.
Yeah, that was a wild time, man. And then we had the furs, the stolen furs. Literally, and the story was it was the best thing ever. Literally, the police charged with $100,000 of stolen furs from. It was from Joey Dorsey's room. Is that what it was? Was it from Joey Dorsey's room?
Yeah, it was.
And the actual reason was they were stripper furs. That was the good story, that they were stripper furs. They weren't real furs. They were fake furs that a stripper used. And that was like the good news.
Dude, that was so funny. So I think that's what I was the beat writer as well. And the way we find out about this, there's a police report that says $10,000 worth of furs. $10,000 worth of furs were stolen from Clyde Wade and Joey Dorsey's apartment. And so that just stands out. Like, what are the Memphis basketball players doing with $10,000 worth of furs, right? And so I'm digging on it and digging on it. And finally, I get Tony Barbie, I guess I can say this all these years later, to talk to me. And he's like, GP, I'm just telling you the story is wrong. I said, Tony, what am I supposed to do? There's a police report that says they got $10,000 worth of furs missing. People want to know why your players got $10,000 worth of furs. He's like, Gary, I'm telling you. It's wrong. It'll be corrected. They didn't really have $10,000 worth of furs. I was like, well, then give me the story. Tell me, like, say something that's believable, because I can't just, like, pretend it's not there. He said, when the police report is amended, it's not going to be furs. There's fake stripper costumes.
Oh, my goodness.
Because Joey's girlfriend is a stripper, and she kept... She kept a couple of her.
Oh my goodness.
She kept four of her outfits at the apartment,
what?
And they're missing. And so the way it went down, the best I can remember, as it was explained to me, is Clyde Wade was the one who called the police.
There's another guy.
Clyde called the police and was doing the police report over the phone, and basically the whole time, like if you were on the phone with pizza delivery. And you're going, hey, do we want cheese sticks? And somebody goes like, yeah, we want cheese sticks. You'd be like, okay, yeah, we need to order cheese sticks. It was one of those types of deals. So Clyde's like on the phone going, oh, hey, what else is missing? Well, anything else? And Joey says, yeah, four of so-and-so's furs are missing. And so Clyde's like, yeah, we're missing four furs. And the police are like, four, like, fur coats? He's like, yeah. And so... They were like, how much are those worth? And Clyde's like, I don't know. And they just estimated what a fur coat cost. And that's how you end up with $10,000 worth of worth of stolen furs. But it was really like maybe $50 worth of stripper costumes.
And then we had the inciting Joey inciting the riot. Was it Joey who incited the riot?
No, it was.
I don't know who incited the riot.
Pierre Niles.
All this stuff happened. And then there was the other fight on Beale Street. Like, yeah. There was that too.
No, Pierre.
I think the fight on Beale Street was separate from the inciting the riot, yeah, wasn't it? Or yeah. That was the same?
Pierre Niles incited the riot.
Where was the riot at? Was that the UAB thing?
No, it was right outside.
No, that was a different thing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A different thing. The fight at UAB was a different thing.
He went into the stands at UAB, I remember.
He reached into the stands.
Yeah.
By the way, you couldn't get away with that today either.
No.
this whole thing. It sounds like the Wild West. How did Pierre Wiles incite the riot?
Something was going on outside the Plush Club, and as the story goes, He's like going back and forth with the cops, like mouthing off. And at some point, he takes his shirt off and is like waving it in the air, like swinging it and chanting, "F the police, F the police." And that was, quote, inciting a riot because other people were like, "Yeah, F the police." And it was like,
"Oh, no, well, he's getting riled up.
We might have a riot here." So he gets hit with an inciting a riot charge. And then the fight on Bill Street was, well, I mean, there was a whole bunch of them, but there was the story about Joey Dorsey jumping off the counter. He was trying to make it rain in the club.
I thought that was a plush club. That was a
I think that was awesome. Yeah. So he.
But that was at Club 240. What the hell?
Club 152? That's where Jeremy Hunt broke his hand in a fight.
That's where Jeremy Hunt broke his hand, right?
Of course.
Dude, here's that one. So I get people communicated back then, email maybe. I get an email from somebody, and it's preseason, so I wasn't seeing the players every day. I get an email from somebody or something from somebody, and they're like, "Yo, I just saw Jeremy Hunt walking around campus. He's got a cast on his arm." I'm like, "Oh, geez." So I think I called John or Tony or DK. I called somebody, and I was like, "Yo, man, somebody just told me they saw Jeremy with a cast on his arm. Like, what's up?" And they were like, yeah, he hurt his wrist. I'm like, "Well, how did he hurt his wrist?" And they were like, we don't want to get into it. And I'm like, well, like, I got to have an explanation. I mean, I'll just keep asking questions until I figure it out. And the initial response I got, like, on the record response, and I don't remember who it was from, so I don't want to, it could have been from anybody on the staff. But the initial story was, okay, you know the rebounding machine that we use? And it's basically, they put it underneath, all basketball programs have this, they put it right underneath the rim, and then you shoot, and the ball falls into this. And then it shoots it back out to you, like they call it the gun. And it shoots it back out to you, and it's just catch and shoot, catch and shoot, catch and shoot, catch and shoot. They said, like, "So you know that thing?" And I said, "Yeah." Said, like, "He caught one weird, and it messed his wrist up." I'm like, "Really? Because I've never heard of that happening before." And they're like, yeah. And within 24 hours, you know, he was in a fight at 152, and he hurt his hand, like, punching a wall or punching somebody. And that's when he got permanently dismissed, except he then was brought back.
Except he came back.
And the Joey Dorsey fighting thing, this was the funniest part. So he's trying to make it rain at the plush club. They won't let him. They're like, "Get down." He's not going to have anybody telling him to get down. So he jumps down, hits a bouncer, and then just takes off running, right? So we start looking into this, and there's like four police reports from downtown Memphis with Joey Dorsey's name connected to them. And all four police reports, or it might have been three. It was like three or four. It was many. Every police report that had his name in it, the story was exactly the same. Joey Dorsey hit me and then took off running. he was just constantly hitting people and running.
God, that's the best.
The whole thing.
I don't know if anything is better, though, than John holding back the letters of intent until his contract was signed. Like, that was great. Like, that was, like, it's a whole thing. Like, that whole era, man. Oh, my God.
The whole thing. Like, can you imagine what it would be like if I wrote that story today about a college basketball coach that I wrote about John Calipari? Holding signed letters of intent from his boss while he's renegotiating a contract. He won't.
Literally every one of those stories we just said, there are about eight of them, would be the lead on Deadspin.
Yes.
Right? I mean, every single one would be the lead on Deadspin. Stripper furs, Joey punching and running, Sean Banks. Like, every one of those stories would have been the lead on Deadspin. As it was just another day in Memphis, Tennessee.
Well, once I moved to CBS and I started, like, traveling around the country and being at other people's practices and making connections with other coaching staff. I remember being in Austin, Texas, and there was an assistant there at the time working for Rick Barnes named Ken McDonald. And I was going to dinner with Ken McDonald, and we were just talking about, you know, whatever. And he said, "Dude, the craziest thing I ever remember on a basketball court is when we played Memphis down here, and it was the Sean Banks got punch game." And he said, "Those dudes were arguing with each other on the court, like threatening to fight each other. On the court." He's like, "We're looking at them like, what are they doing? Like, these guys are out of their mind." And so I started asking questions about that, and this is actually what happened in the game. At one point, I don't know what triggered it, but at one point in the middle of the game, Sean Banks is mouthing off to Arthur Barclay. And Arthur Barclay told him on the court, "When we get to the locker room, I'm going to beat your ass." And the way the story goes is, they game's over, they go to the locker room, and it wasn't even like they got in the locker room and started mouthing, and then it led to a punch. They literally got in the locker room, closed the door, and Arthur Barclay just punched Sean Banks right in the face. Like, exactly the way he promised.
Oh,
it
man.
Wasn't like they kept fighting and then it escalated to this thing. He just, like, they walked in the locker room, and Arthur Barclay just immediately, boom, punches Sean Banks right in his eye. Just the whole thing, bananas, man. God.
Bananas.
What in the world? Anyway, those are all fun stories. All right, well, maybe you'll get one tomorrow at Cincinnati that's similar, right?
Yeah. We'll see.
Travel safely.
Yep, thanks.
I'll see you later. Bye-bye. That's Jeff Crockett.
Beautiful.
There's so many of those stories.
Man.
I mean, just that any of them, like if they happened today, like Jeff said, it would be the lead story on Deadspin. If you tried to enroll Sean Banks or the Arthur Barclay-Sean Banks fight, or even, you know, Sean Banks coming back for his sophomore year, skinny,
crazy,
out of shape. The other thing, how about this? So Sean Banks was ruled academically ineligible,
mm-hmm.
but the way the rule is written is you can play all the way up until the next semester starts.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you are it's already clear, all your scores are in and you're going to be ineligible. Mm-hmm. And so he'd flunked everything.
Jeez.
Wouldn't go to class.
Not into class.
And it's over with. They know. They find this out like in early December.
Yeah.
They kept playing him until literally the last second they were allowed. Like a guy who's
just right up to the win, and they're like, okay, he can't play anymore, and just done.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was technically allowed, but it's not the way most schools would handle that situation. And then
that's a bad look.
And then they, you know, he's ruled academically ineligible, and then never to be heard of from again until he's like in jail a million. A million times, but I remember talking to the staff about him, and you know, I think you've probably seen the videos of Penny and Mike Miller like walking into classes and checking on, making sure students are there, players are there like they're supposed to be. So they said they would take Sean Banks to class. They would actually like go to his dorm or apartment, get him, walk him to class. They would even, so first they would tell Sean, we're going to come check on you.
Yeah.
Like, we're telling you, we're coming to check on you. And they go check, he just wouldn't be there, just didn't care. So then the next step was, all right, we're going to come get you at your apartment. We're going to walk you to class.
Right.
So they get him, they'd walk into class, then they'd leave, then he'd leave.
After they were out of there.
Then the next step was, okay, we're going to come get you, and we're going to walk you to class, and then we're going to sit in class with you. And they'd sit in class with him for like 20 minutes, then they'd leave. He would leave 1 minute later. They could not get him to stay in the classroom. He refused to do it. I mean, he was a disaster.
That's crazy.
I've told the story before. In his sophomore year, when it became like he's butting heads with Darius Washington, and he had his little group of bad people, and the whole thing was just a mess. At one point, and when it's clear the end is near, because nobody can reach him anymore. He's disinterested. There's no passion for anything that he's doing. And John, to his credit, I guess, like kept pushing and pushing and pushing, trying to get him to respond. He just wouldn't.
Yeah.
And at one point, John stands up on a chair in practice, so mad at Sean Banks because he's just a disaster. And he points at Sean and he says, "You are effing us! You're effing us!
Oh my
just
God,
screaming.
Just going nuts."
And I'm like trying to hold it together because this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. John Calipari standing on a chair screaming to Sean Banks,
dude,
"You're effing us in our ass." It was just like, what? He was...
Pierre Niles, if I remember correctly, he was still here when Pastner took over, right?
Yeah.
Is that when the UAB, and he slapped the fan at the UAB game under Pastner?
I think that was still under Cal.
That was under Cal because they came from behind at UAB or something.
I mean, that's what, like,
I'm trying to remember.
Robert Dozier was accused of hitting a girl.
Yeah.
So there was, like, a girl in the UAB student section with a painted-on black eye. It was a rowdy environment.
Yeah.
And then Pierre Niles just reaches up and smacks somebody. Like, if that happened today.
I remember that he didn't get suspended for that, did he?
I don't think so.
I don't remember a suspension.
I know that it was not. Today, that would be the lead story on SportsCenter. It'd be all 100%. Over Twitter, viral. And back then, it was just like another of like 50 wild things right. happening within the Memphis basketball program.
Nuts.
Totally nuts.
What a crazy time, man. And you were covering all this stuff.
I was there for most of it.
God, you were blessed.
I don't know about blessed, but it was interesting. It kept me busy for sure.
I bet.
Be back in a second.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
538, Gary Parrish Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. I was just thinking of stories, like brainstorming, trying to think of anything else crazy from those years. One time, like, they'd have an open locker room. I will say, for all this wild stuff that happened, when I was covering that team while John Calipari was the coach, they were pretty open in terms of availability. Like, every practice was open and locker rooms were open after the game.
You interviewed Cal while he was taking showers? Like, he'd be in the shower room or whatever, and you'd use that time or
a
treadmill?
That was more of just how busy John was.
You'd be interviewing while he's taking
Because every night after practice, he'd have somewhere to be, basically. Yeah. And so we figured the most efficient way for me to talk to him, but him also be able to, you know, get closer to either getting home or getting to a game or getting wherever he needed to, that, yes, in the office at the Finch Center, he would, literally take a shower, with a curtain and everything.
Sure, yeah, you're right on the other side.
And I'd be sitting right outside the shower being like, all right, so, John, explain to me again. Tell me the story again about how you got Rodney Carney or whatever, right? But, yeah, he'd be showering.
So funny.
I'd be talking to him while he, took a shower. That's 100% true. They had a player named Tangaray Beavers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember so the locker room was always open. And I would just be in the locker room talking to whoever I was talking to. And I remember one time. Tank Beavers was he was butt naked in the locker room, which was a very normal thing.
Sure.
But, if you're naked in the locker room, you're usually naked for a very short period of time.
Yeah, you're covering up, you're putting a pair of pants on quickly,
You're taking a towel off.
Yeah, it's a transition period.
Right.
Quickly.
He was just naked.
Just rolling, he's just walking around with his deal out.
He was just, it seemed like he was just. He
showing
was,
off.
He wanted, definitely showing off.
Oh, was he?
It seemed like he just wanted to be naked for the whole time, all right?
Definitely.
And it's not even like he's doing it and everybody's making a big deal about it.
Sure.
He's just sort of just like naked, just standing there, walking around, whatever. And I don't care, but I do notice it, right?
Yeah.
Then he has baby powder.
Oh.
And he starts covering himself in baby powder, making himself completely white. It's like a game to him or something.
Okay.
Like when your 4-year-old maybe gets in a bubble bath and decides they're going to cover themselves up in bubble bath. Yeah. This is what Tank Beavers is doing in the middle of the locker room, but with baby powder.
Okay.
So he has basically made his entire body, his naked body, white, completely white.
No pants on.
He hadn't even thought about putting pants on. All right?
Okay.
I'm talking about this is 7 straight minutes. He's just covered himself in baby powder.
Walking around.
Just having a good time. And what's funny is nobody's even really asking him what he's doing, as if this is a very normal thing for him to do. Then he takes the baby powder.
Yeah.
Pours some on a chair and starts chopping it up like it's lines of cocaine, like he's playing a game. As if there's
he's going to snort it?
Yes. As if there's not a reporter standing there who could theoretically document all of this if I wanted to.
Right.
So I'm like, what is wrong?
Yeah, you're just
what is wrong with Tangaray Beavers? This guy's and then of course, he ends up murdered.
Oh no.
He's dead.
God, I don't mean to laugh at this.
I mean, you can laugh at that part.
I didn't know the dude was God.
He got shot at TGI Fridays. And I remember when it happened, on the Memphis message board or wherever it is, people would talk about these types of things.
Yeah.
People would say, isn't it sad? You can't even go to TGI Fridays anymore without having to worry about getting shot. And I'm like, well, yes, you can.
Was it that one downtown? Was that the shoot?
No, it wasn't here. No, it was back home in Alabama.
Okay.
I'm like, what do you mean you can't go to TJ Fridays without worrying about you?
What are you talking about?
They didn't. Tangaray Beaver didn't get shot at TJ Fridays.
Right.
whoever wanted to kill him found him at TGI Fridays and shot him there.
Right.
It wasn't like just some random, like, right. Oh, you can't even order mozzarella sticks anymore these days without catching a bullet in your head.
Right.
It's like, no, that's where the people who wanted to kill Tangaray Beavers, for whatever reason, that's where they found
him.
And
they're going to get him.
And that's where they did it. Right. It wasn't like some, boy, you got to be careful at TGI Fridays these days. Like, no, you don't have to be careful at TGI Fridays. Unless somebody's trying to kill you, and then you got to be careful everywhere.
Sure,
right?
Yeah. So, it wasn't a byproduct of TGI Fridays.
Anyway, rest in peace to Tank Beavers.
Are we a moment of silence for Tank Beavers?
I think so.
Rest in peace.
All right, yeah. Sure. I mean, he made me laugh, if nothing else, right?
You'll always have that baby powder moment.
I'll always have that baby powder moment.
Yeah.
Be back with dinner to go.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
MWI3, it's little buddy's on point like Kyrie. My mama taught me never let a sucker try me, but if he do, draw blood like an IV. I'm a lover, not a fighter dog, but I done earned most stripes than the Titan blow. Low key, fat can't fight it all, but she got a CHL if you tryna brawl. All peace, no war. I need bank like a blackboard.
New Amsterdam Vodka is a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains. 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness. Filtered 3 times to create a soft finish. How smooth is it, Mr. Big Chest?
It is so smooth you can drink it straight.
So smooth you can drink it straight. You don't have to. Just saying, if you get into a situation where you... whatever you're mixing with ain't there, you can drink it straight. Quality vodka that's reasonably priced. You can spend more on vodka in the liquor store if you want to. They have more expensive bottles to sell you. But why would you do that?
No.
If I got you a quality vodka that's reasonably priced, just go ahead and take that one. They've got flavored vodkas as well. Grapefruit, apple, peach, orange, mango, pineapple, red berry, coconut, lemon, raspberry. Try one. Try them all. Mix them together if you want to get freaky deaky. And remember,
we do want to get freaky deaky.
You want to get freaky deaky?
Well, you know, it's a weekend, Gary. It's Friday. Let's go. Let's get freaky deaky.
I'm just trying to go to sleep.
I know. You're tired. You know, it's been a long week.
I'm just thinking about going to sleep.
I know. I don't think your family's going to let you. They probably want to have some fun. They haven't seen you for a while, Gary. Just remember that when you go home.
I will. Okay? I will. We've turned Memphis into the number one market per capita for New Amsterdam Vodka in the entire country.
Nice.
That's an accomplishment
that.
I'm proud of.
Congratulations.
So keep buying it when you're in the liquor store, bar, or restaurant. You ask for it by name. New Amsterdam Vodka. Pour your soul out on the web. NewAmsterdamSpirits.com. Let's do Dinner to Go.
Dinner to Go is presented by Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop, a Folks Folly original.
It's Dinner to Go. What did we learn today?
A whole bunch of stuff, but we mostly focused on Tiger basketball. Yeah, we got caught reminiscing a little bit about the John Calipari glory days, but a big game for the Tigers tomorrow at Cincinnati. As Jeff and I discussed, I think you can reasonably call it the biggest game Memphis has played in maybe 5 years, because it's the first March game that Memphis has played, in maybe 5 years.
Yep.
That you can say if they win it, they're still in the conversation, reasonable conversation, to maybe get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. On March 1st last year, you could not say that. On March 1st the year before that, you could not say that. On March 1st, the year before that, you could not say that. Really, the last time you could say on March 1st, if Memphis does A, B, and C, Memphis can get to the NCAA tournament from an at-large perspective, it was probably March 1st, 2014, 5 years ago.
Oh.
And it speaks to, you know, how poorly the last 2 years of Josh Pastner went and how terrible the Tubby Smith two-year era was. But the future is bright and the present's okay. Because whether it was last offseason or early in this season, I consistently said if Memphis can somehow, some way, you know, keep the season interesting into March, and by interesting, I mean on March 1st, can you say, hey, there is an actual path maybe to getting an at-large bid? That'll be overachieving by definition, because remember, Penny Hardaway inherited a program that finished 161st at KenPom and was preseason 107. They were not supposed to be a team that would have a chance on March 1st to get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. They weren't supposed to be 70th at KenPom, 53rd in the net. That's what they are right now. Again, they have overachieved relative to preseason expectations, at least according to the computer numbers. And now, on March 2nd, they'll play a game against a nationally ranked team and longtime rival, where if they can get the win, it at least allows us to keep having these conversations. They're unlikely to get the win. They're going to be around an 8, 9, 10-point underdog. KenPom only gives them a 20% chance to win that game. So it's possible, if not probable, that on Monday we can talk about Tiger basketball in a variety of ways, but we will no longer be able to talk about, in a meaningful way, Quadrant 1 wins and what they have to do to get an at-large bid. Because if they do not win at Cincinnati, that conversation is over. But the idea that on March 1st we can still have the conversation is pretty cool, if only because it's been a while.
What's the biggest game tonight?
I guess it's in the NBA, and it's going to be the Milwaukee Bucks at the Los Angeles Lakers, Staples Center, downtown Los Angeles. Bucks are 47-14, alone in first in the East, 2.5 games ahead of Marc Gasol's Toronto Raptors. Lakers 30-31, 3 games back at the Clippers for 8th in the West with just 21 games remaining. So if LeBron's going to not missed the playoffs for the first time since 2005. I don't want to say they got to win this game because that's not technically true, but they got to start winning some games.
And try to get past the Greek freak.
It's it's not easy to make up 3 games with 21 to play, but that's what they got to do and pass multiple teams to get there. So big game tonight. Late tip. It's going to be 9:30 Central. Milwaukee, 4-point favorite. The total's 238.5. You can watch it if you want to watch it on ESPN.
What should I watch on TV?
Do we have a new one?
We got a brand new Dateline NBC.
Excellent. Do you have your announcer voice, trailer voice for Dateline ready to go?
I do.
Excellent.
I wrote my own little
your script?
Dateline preview.
You got your Dateline script?
I watched all of the previews on Dateline's Twitter feed. They have multiple previews.
Excellent.
So I watched them, and then I developed my own preview.
Sure. Let's hear the description, Gary.
You would think that with as busy as I am, I would find a better use for my time
heard that.
Than to write Dateline previews.
No.
But that's not true.
No.
I cannot find a better use for my time.
Oh, it's good.
I'm committed to writing Dateline previews every Friday.
Every Friday. Let's hear the description of Dateline.
Okay. Yes. Pam had a security system, a camera in the front of her house, bars on her doors. She took every precaution a precautious person takes, and yet still, she vanished.
Ooh.
One night from her home. She was never seen alive again. What happened inside that house? What happened to Pam? We explore this mystery tonight on Dateline.
Who's hosting tonight? Who's reporting?
You ready?
I'm ready. Come on. Let's go. Come on, Keith.
You haven't
Keith Morrison. Come on.
Dennis Murphy reports.
Sucks.
You son of a
freaking
bitch.
Freaking Keith Morrison might be dead, Gary.
Where? I think this is.
He might be dead.
I think this might be 2 weeks in a row, Dennis Murphy, maybe we had Josh Mankiewicz.
I think actually two reporters might have deceased. Andrea Canning hasn't been reporting for like a month, and Keith Morrison.
Like, Dateline's so consumed with what happened to Pam. Why don't you, they need to investigate what happened to Keith Morrison.
Your reporters.
Where is Keith Morrison?
And your best reporter is not, MIA.
I think we had Josh Mankiewicz last week, Dennis Murphy this week. We ain't had Andrea Canning in a while.
No.
And I don't even know if Keith Morrison's alive still.
You know what show my wife has got me watching is this Friends from College on Netflix. Have you seen it?
I don't know that.
Watch Friends from College. It's very good.
I don't have time to be watching stuff. I'm writing Dateline previews. You think I got time to just watch?
Of course not.
New television. I really don't even have time to watch the television shows that I want to watch.
Right.
I did start a new podcast though.
What is it?
Over My Dead Body.
What's it about? I'm assuming it's about murders.
Okay, hit the button, and instead of what to read, we'll go what to listen to.
Okay,
is there anything I need to make sure I read?
No, but we're going to make a listen to, and it'll be the podcast, right? Over My Dead Body. So it's the same company, Wondery, that did the Dirty John podcast that was really good, the Dr. Death podcast that was really good. This one's called Over My Dead Body, and so the story's wild. It's these two people. They get married, right?
Yeah.
Husband and wife, they have two little kids, two little boys. Then they go through a divorce. Divorce gets nasty.
Right.
All right? And the woman hates living in Tallahassee. The husband is a professor at Florida State.
Okay.
And she hates living there, but a judge rules you cannot leave Tallahassee and take your boys because we want the boys to be around their father.
Okay.
And she hates it there. And now she's basically stuck there for the next 16 years because the judge won't allow her to move her
kids.
But, like, all of a sudden, the husband is in his driveway talking on the phone. Somebody comes up to the window. Pop. Two shots in the head. All right? Ooh. So it's like, oh, my God, who would kill this guy in this neighborhood?
Right.
Long story not so long. It appears that her mother and younger brother hired hitmen to go kill the estranged husband. Three people have been arrested for the crime, the two shooters and the woman who set it up.
And it wasn't?
No. And they haven't charged the mom, the girl's mom and brother yet, but the circumstantial evidence is overwhelming.
Wow.
Like, there is no doubt in anybody's mind that they hired these killers to kill the father of the husband.
Yeah.
And yet the police haven't charged him yet. It is bananas. Crazy. So jump into that if you're bored.
What's on tap next week?
Well, on Monday we'll look back at Memphis, Cincinnati, get ready for the final week of the Tigers regular season. We'll daydream about Zion like we tend to do. Keep an eye on the race to convey and the NBA in general. Should be a fun week. Enjoy your weekend. I'm going to enjoy mine. We're going to be back here Monday at 4. Till then, be careful. Be kind. Be good. Rep your hood.
Ask Alexa or Google to play 92.9 ESPN. WMFS FM and HD1 Bartlett. WMFS Memphis. A Radio.com sports station. This is 92.9 FM ESPN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.